our services at Prairie by lighting the chalice, and I will do that. I'd like to say a few words about that and the reason, what the chalice is being dedicated to this morning. This weekend, we're all celebrating Martin King's birthday, and some of you, when we talk about Martin Luther King, we usually refer to the civil rights movement of the 60s, and some of you who've spoken to me may know that I kind of bristle a little bit at that terminology, because we talk about that as if nothing had gone on before that time.
Can you use the mic so we can all hear?
Oh, that's just the recording mic. Oh, I'll talk louder. I'll talk louder, unless you would like to move up. There are a couple of seats up here. We can get Bradley to move over here. At any rate, I, especially for the young people in the congregation this morning, I would like to emphasize the fact that the civil rights movement started long, long before the 60s. In the last century, you had the Quakers working for civil rights, you had the abolitionists, you had the Unitarians, thank you, many other people. The two most famous prominent civil rights organizations, the NAACP and the Urban League, were founded respectively about 1905, 1906, 1910. So the movement of the 60s is not a new phenomenon. So I would like to light the chalice this morning for all of those people from before the 60s who worked in the civil rights movement, and all of those people after the 60s who are still working in the civil rights movement. The small people that no one, the unsung heroes that no one talks about. I would like to especially say to our young people here that when you go out and you hear someone make a racist remark and you walk up to that person and say to them, that wasn't a nice thing to say, or I'm offended by hearing you say that, that takes as much courage sometimes as walking on a freedom march does. So, all those little people who individually maybe carried away one thimbleful of mortar from the wall of racism, but who collectively have carved out huge chunks in that wall, I would like to light the chalice this morning. Okay. Now, before we begin, a few more words, and then I'm going to try and keep quiet and let other people talk. What do you do with burnt matches? Say a few words here. First of all, I have an inflammatory title, and so before hands go up to ask me why I use that title, white women, black men, brown children. There are, yes, black women who are married to white men with brown children, but they bring with them a different history and a different load of baggage, and I think that's a different program. And so that's the reason that has not been included in this. Now this is where I need my notes that I left on the kitchen. The idea of interracial relationships is not something that's new, but it's something that's growing very rapidly. From the 1600s, the question of racial mixing has been a dominant topic in American social history. The colonists in Virginia in 1630 or so passed a law because white women were marrying black slaves. They were indentured servants. The black men were slaves. They were marrying them. And Virginia passed a law at that time which said that any white woman who was caught with a black man who was a slave would be herself taken into slavery, and her children would be made slaves. So this sort of things going on then. In literature and the arts, we talked about it a lot. We don't talk about it as much today, which is why I say the racism that nobody talks about. Two of our Nobel Prize winners, Sinclair Lewis and Faulkner, wrote about interracial marriages and relationships. You see it in movies, if any of you have seen Griffith's Birth of a Nation, many other areas that it's very, it was very prominently talked about. We might even say that one of the reasons that the Ku Klux Klan developed was because of the antipathy against interracial relationships. And every argument for integration, for getting rid of discrimination, has always been followed by that last word, but would you want your daughter to marry one? Okay. We don't hear quite as much about this sort of thing today. But if you look around you, you will see that American people come in all colors, from the darkest brown to the lightest of colors. If you're sitting in a room somewhere, be careful what you say, because that blonde, blue-eyed, Scandinavian-looking person could very well be black. You don't know that. Okay. A couple of statistics, and then we'll sing a song and let the children go downstairs. You should know that my figures are not completely up to date here, but in approximately 1950s, which is quite a while back, a professor at Ohio State did a study on interracial marriages, and some of you may have much newer information than this, and at the time he estimated that 77% of all black people in this country were mixed with white blood, and that 21% of all white people in this country had black blood. So, again, never know who you're sitting next to. All right. With that, can we sing number 8 in your songbook?
My soul, my soul. children can now be down to this on the school class.
Before I introduce the panel, I would like to say one thing, and that is that I hoped that this would be sort of an audience participation program as well as just depending on the people who are sitting at the panel. So I will turn to you. I hope that you would be willing to maybe share some of your own experiences, your own thoughts on this topic, and join in the discussion. The Unitarians are famous for loving to discuss, so I hope this topic won't keep your mouth clamped shut. Let me introduce our panel members, two of whom are Prairie members and two of whom are not. So our Prairie members, how about our Prairie members first? Karen Jackson, whom all of you know, and would you like to say something about yourself? Or?
Well, a lot of my memories are from at least 10 years ago. My husband died 10 years ago, and I think the period of time that we were together covered approximately 10 years. And he did march with Father Graffi, and he would have had a lot more stories to tell. But a lot of information I have and my awareness came from sharing my life with him during that period of time.
And Karen has two children. Bradley is staying?
Yes, Bradley and my daughter Sylvia is in the back.
Okay. Now, you want to take your place at the table?
Okay.
And Dodie Chaprou, whom most of you know, you want to say a word about before you take your
place? Well, some of you already know my life's been a bit of a soap opera. And I'm not going to go into the details today, but my son's father and I are living in separate states. We are friends. We were totally apart for a while and have become reacquainted with a good friendship more recently. And so some of this for me is brand new, ongoing, and is also past history. So it's been a lot, real exciting.
Now, both Karen and Dodie are presently living as single women who are not with their mates. Our next couple have an ongoing relationship, a present relationship, Jeffrey Thompson and Tracy Lewis. Can you stand up, please? And you want to come up to the front? You want to say anything before we...
Good morning.
Jeffrey and Tracy are not married at this time, and I might say that it's trying to get a little bit of variety so that you have different points of view. Both Dodie and Karen's relationship, Karen's was, as she says, in the past 10 years ago. Dodie's was in the past but has re-emerged in a sense. Jeffrey is currently engaged in a relationship. And I'm so happy to have a black man on the panel because I thought at first I was going to have all white women, and it's nice to get the viewpoint from the black male as well. So with that, let's start off with a general question to the audience and then maybe more specifically addressed to the panel members, and that is how are white women attracted to black men, or black women attracted to white women, black men attracted to white women? What are some of the reasons generally for that kind of attraction? I think that's something, how do these people get together? I'm going to say, I'd like to get some response from the audience on this. There are a whole lot of things that sort of float around as to why this kind of relationship takes place.
Are you assuming that it's different from how anyone is attracted to anyone? I would think it's harder. It's an attraction that's harder to act on and maybe takes longer to act on, but not that it's different, the same kind of things. I like the person's sense of humor, I like the way they look, I like the same kind of things that attract anybody to anybody, But then they have to reach the other stumbling block. Is that enough of an attraction to make, I know this is going to cause problems.
There are a lot of stereotypes and myths that float around that do cause some, that sometimes, now this is not true in all cases, but that in sometimes cause one person to seek out the other, or having met another person of a different race to want to continue that relationship.
What, it doesn't matter what color you are, you like each other, what's the problem?
Okay, that's what she's saying about Mr. Dean. There are a lot of problems you're going to hear about something.
I wondered if once in a while it's not that the young people are rebellious against parents and they just want to show them they're independent.
Okay, that is one reason. And you sometimes find that there are political reasons why people will get together with someone of another race. Anything else that you can think of? Any other?
Well, a different culture is just attractive because it's different, or someone from a different culture.
So, kind of curiosity.
They have a different way of acting, and that's attractive, right?
Are you saying sort of some curiosity about learning about someone else and someone else's
culture? Well, I wouldn't have just said curiosity. I would have just said it's attractive to because it's so different. It's so new and so different.
Anybody else here want to throw something?
Well, I wonder, Pat, if there's a sort of general difference in white females versus black females, or white males versus black males. So there might be an attraction to certain qualities that, for example, a black male might find in a fairly typical white female. I guess the question I'm asking is that in the black culture versus the white culture, do males and females in those two cultures have different kind of attitudes towards a relationship and marriage and so forth?
They probably do, and that's my reason for not dealing with black women with white men and in the same programs. Because I think they do bring different things to a relationship. But let's you know, open up, when you see a black woman with a white male or a white woman with a black male, what are some of the things that go through your mind as to why this relationship is taking place? Let's clear the air.
This is a difficult thing to answer because if one says what one's thinking, it sounds like stereotypical responses and racism. So
I'm not asking what you think. I'm asking you what you understand to be
understand is the people I know are like anybody else. The couple I know the best met in high school. They were high school sweethearts, and that's where they met like anybody else.
Yes, sir.
And they had a relationship. You know, I mean, it was difficult and all the rest of it, but it sounds like a lot of other love stories I've ever heard about in terms of the people I know. So it's hard to make generalizations out of people's individual life stories.
But there are some specific reasons why people of one race actually do encourage and foster a relationship, and you mentioned one of them, the cult, just wanting to know someone from a different culture. There is just plain curiosity. People,
the other thing that I can say is that one of the things I've noticed when I've seen interracial couples is that it seems to me that what I've seen is black males are much more open about displaying affection to whom they're with. And that is just an observation, you know. And I can't say that it's valid or anything else, but that, you know, some people may be more responsive to having attention and physical affection. And I'm not talking about a lot more touching.
Okay, I'm not sure that's a racial thing.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure you can, you know, if you were a white woman, you would find many white men who might have that same characteristics. Anybody else want to tap? How about that?
My nephew presently has a relationship with a black woman 20 years older, or 10 years older than me. And she's a belly dancer and plays the trumpet for a living. And they live in a bus in California. But I suspect, I guess one thing I would say, I haven't met the couple, it's been years since I've seen my nephew, but I would suspect that they're attracted to the lack of privilege in each other. The fact that that a black man does not have the same degree of privilege in this culture that a white man has.
And so,
and so too for a black woman does not have the same degree of privilege.
But are you saying then that a white woman would be attracted to a black man out of some kind of pity or concern, social concern,
or the lack of privilege, where she may feel more on an equal footing with him,
that she would like build up her ego to because she. Any other?
I'm thinking of some cultural stereotypes.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping to dig out.
Probably still operate, although maybe subconsciously a lot of times. For instance, the sexual stereotype.
Exactly.
Black males somehow have more prowess or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the curiosity that, you know, you meet someone you're attracted to. Well, let's find out about that. Dorothy?
I won't generalize on this one, but I'll say my experience. The only relationship I was ever in with a black man. Before long, I started to realize that, in a way, my being white was kind of a status symbol for him. And that didn't feel good at all. Because that felt like that wasn't something specific about me. And but I suspect that that's not a totally unique experience.
But there are a lot of things like this that are floating around, and in some cases they may be true, and in some cases they may not be true. I mean, the power thing, the political, the politics, and so forth. So at this point, I mean, having brought up some of this from you, the general kinds of things, maybe our panel would like to address that specifically. What attracted, what do you know, can you say something about what attracted you to your mate?
The challenge.
A lot of these issues are all the same ones. I had several others to also encounter as a challenge. He was 20 years older. He'd been married before and had 5 children from that previous marriage who were, he was still financially responsible for. He was from a different religion. I was raised Catholic. My parents were racist,
and really
the rest of the family. And I remember when we'd known each other several years at this point, and lived together for a year. And my, when I first said, "I'm not the man I want to marry," and my parents found out who he was, they wanted me to go and talk to the pastor of the church. So I said, "Okay." I'll do this your way, you know. I'm going to do what I want to do in the end anyway. I mean, it is. You find the person that you're compatible with. You share your basic belief in life on what's important, I guess, is what I found. And someone who just the typical things, you get along, you agree on things, you're compatible. And it just happens that he was black. Well, we went to talk to the priest, and he says, "Well, you know, you're going to have all these challenges to meet." And I said, "Yes, and I want this bad enough to face those. It's something I want to do, regardless of what those challenges may be." So we came back out, and he said to my parents, he said, "She agrees with you." What? I agreed. I wanted to meet those challenges. I did not agree with my parents that it was the wrong thing to do. So the priest was a hypocrite in my eyes. I've left the Catholic Church, and I've never stepped back in one as a member. And that's why I'm here, as a Unitarian.
Anybody else on the panel I'd like to address that specific question of how and why you began a relationship with someone of the opposite?
I think we met in a way that most people meet a mutual friend. We were introduced that way. But a lot of the stereotypes you have about why, you know, what other people then attach to my being in this relationship, especially from my parents, that I must not think much of myself. I must have a low self-esteem, that I would seek that out. That I was going through a phase. I was at Madison. I was obligatory minority relationship. And so, you know, I think I've heard the whole thing, and never in that was there acknowledgement of, you know, who the person was that I was with and why it was, should have been very obvious to them why I was attracted to him. And, you know, we had a lot in common, and there were, but they couldn't get past that, and we still struggle with that as my family.
Jeremy, how about the male point of view here? What? Well, any comments on what attracted you to a white woman?
I guess the only thing I can say is that I can only give my point of view, and I can't speak for all black males or any male, so I think it'd just be ludicrous to do that. But I guess the most important thing is that there's this movie that, you know, it's kind of funny. It's, I'm always bemused by it. So, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? And John Wentz Prey, you know, really good-looking Cynthia Portier. He's everything that you can imagine. He's a mother's dream and a daughter's, you know, hope. He's a doctor, and he's accomplished, and of course he's 37, and he's published, and he's had all these things, and, you know, the mother's overwhelmed by Kate, I think it's Katharine Hepburn, and she says, well, I hope you don't mind if I just said, oh my. I guess if most parents said to me just, oh my, or most friends said, oh my, I guess I can breathe a little bit, you know, more easily. But mostly a lot of people have not said, oh my, they've said, oh, like this. Our parents have said this, and I guess, you know, because Tracy is not my first relationship that I've been in with a white woman, I can't really use that as an indicator. I can only say, for as many different reasons that you've given the audience about being attracted to a person of another sex, it all boils down to freedom of choice, I think. And, you know, you get into a class with somebody, you find someone's humorous, or you find someone's, you know, attractive. The whole point is that what do you do when you get in a relationship, and or how far is it worth it? And I went to Notre Dame, and we're number one, of course. We graduated 100% athletes too. I thought I'd tell you. I sat at the bench. When I was going through Notre Dame and I first started dating, it was really interesting because it was almost as if the women who I was meeting and I was asking out, was like, you know, it was almost like almost a disbelief if you have the audacity to ask me out, but I'm flattered, you know. And so it was a lot of things going on there. And then finally, you know, I asked for very safe things like, would you have breakfast with me in the dining hall? Really innocuous things, you know, so they could think about, you know, me during the day or trash me, whatever. But the fact is they could get up at any point in time in the dining hall and say, well, I have a class, 9 o'clock, it's 8:55, goodbye. But usually I tried to build on little small things like that, and I've always tried to do in my relationships was use my personality, you know. Of course they saw my blackness, but they didn't see my personality. They didn't see the wit, they didn't see the charm, they didn't see everything. There's somebody picking splinters out of the back of my, you know, rear end in basketball, but I guess the whole point I'm trying to make is that it was almost as if, you know, I had to, I was an apologist for black men. I was an apologist for my race. I had to show, I had to prove it, you know, that I was worth it, you know, for some reason. And it's either that or sit home on Saturday nights, you know, or Friday nights in Notre Dame. Believe me, it's really in South Bend, Indiana, boy. You know, happiness is looking in rearview mirror in South Bend. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I just felt that it was worth it. And, you know, I always felt that it was worth it, my relationships. Not just to prove, you know, that I was worthwhile, but then when the relationship did start and then, you know, the tension began to rise, to really show that black people in general are tired of apologizing for their humanity. And I guess that's it.
Thank you.
Okay. Can I put in my 2 bits?
Yes, Dodie.
Richard and I met in Vienna, Austria. We were both how many thousand miles away from home, both music students. And I probably heard him play the piano before I ever met him. And that probably had a lot to do with the attraction. I have a photo that I brought today of Richard and my mother. He is now living in Long Beach, and this is the keyboard of the organ he plays in Los Angeles. And I think probably music was our mutual meeting ground. having nothing to do with skin color and a lot to do with, we had a mutual interest, and he was a very attractive man.
I
wasn't too shabby myself then.
A little later on, though, there's something also interesting about your relationship, the fact that it began in Europe.
Yep.
And there's a great difference in the way that you feel about yourself and feel about relating with someone of another race when you're overseas than you do in this country, and that's that might be something interesting to touch on later. I want to move on a little bit to the problems of racism that you encounter when you are an interracial couple. As I subtitled this, The Racism No One Talks About, we talk about how badly our Native Americans are treated, how badly Black people are treated, how badly Hispanics are treated. You rarely hear anyone talk about how badly a white woman can be treated if she has a Black significant other or has children by a Black significant other. Nor do you hear about the problems that are inherent to a Black male who has enough problems with racism in itself when someone sees him with a white woman. So I'd like to, our panel and perhaps some of you in the audience can make some contributions to this, but let's talk a little bit about this. Now, Karen touched a little bit on the kinds of reactions you get from your family, and that's probably the most difficult reactions to overcome in this situation. Jeffrey, do you want to say something about that first? Tracy touched a little bit on that also, but let's talk about the reaction from your family. What did your family say when they found out you were dating a white girl?
Well, I grew up in a family that was very small and at the same time dominated by Black women. So there were no Black male significant others.
I didn't get that acceptance from my family. Haven't gotten it from acquaintances all the time. And when I went to meet his family, his kids are, some of them are still communicating with me as a friend. I didn't ask that they call me mom, although they were almost grown men, young woman. But we are friends. And his ex-mother-in-law adopted me as her daughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have that kind of caring and loving and giving handed out to you, how do you walk away from it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we all want in this life. That's why I'm at a Unitarian and not a Catholic, because this group here has offered me that when I needed support and acceptance and help. It was offered. There are some people here that I will never forget. Just like I will never, never forget that family. When his ex-mother-in-law died, I went to that funeral, and I got funeral days where I said, my mother-in-law died. There's beauty in that, that you just, it's wonderful. It's worth fighting for.
Well, I would like to thank all of the members of our panel. I don't imagine that this was a particularly easy topic for people to talk about, and they did splendidly. There are a few things that we didn't have a chance to touch on, the question of the children, which I did expect to at least touch on a little bit here, and the whole question of loneliness, because you pointed that out. I mean, if the Black community will not accept you because you marry a Black man, and your family and the white community disown you because of the same reason, what have you got there to hold you up?
Friends.
Okay. Yeah. So thank you very, very much. We'll sing one song before we go. You turn to number 24. I'm glad you're coming.
Joy or sorrow that the congregation ought to know about. And I'd like to start now by asking any guest who is here to introduce themselves if they want to, or if you have a friend who has brought you who wants to introduce you, that is okay too. Anyone who wants to introduce themselves or be introduced?
My brother, Stanley's sister. I've been married for 55 years. This is her brother, Stanley Shivers, and I am her husband's sister, Odell
Alexander. I'd like to introduce Marge and Barbara Colbert, who I just didn't bring, but I re-met them again this morning. Their daughter went to Bernie's place with Heidi. They've been married 15 years ago.
I'm Anna Moses, and this is Nancy Fetty.
This is my friend and neighbor, Nancy Scher.
I'm Diane Kenzie, this is my husband, Bill.
I've never missed it. I used to come here, but a long time ago.
As a child.
Yeah.
I have a friend who came to give me some moral support this morning, May Freitas, whom some of you who come to play readers may know.
I'd like to end
friend and colleague, Harold Gates, who's the minority coordinator at Memorial Bank.
I just want to say briefly that I'm one of the co-founders of the Interracial Families Network, and you can reach the network through Family Enhancement Program with Barbara Golden. That's 256-3890, and I'll be glad to talk with anybody about that.
We just got an announcement through the mail, which will go in our newsletter, so that if you didn't catch it and don't get it from him today, you can catch it in the newsletter. Any other guests?
I'm Becky Clark. I'm new to Madison, and I'm very glad that I came today.
I'm Doug Painter. This is my wife, Joan, and we came, we're not members, we came because of an interest in this topic, and we belong to the Interracial Family Network that Harold talked about. I play basketball with Jeff. I should say, I try to keep up with Jeff.
Any other people who would
like to report,
please?
Yes. Margaret Helling, this is my husband, Joe Powell.
Anyone else?
No.
Okay. Well, what we like to say is that if you enjoyed this service and you really, and we welcome you to come back. And we always like to say you have to come at least 6 times before you get a real flavor of what we're all about, because we're different every time. But we are very, we try to be very welcoming. Okay, joys and sorrows. I want to announce one of my own. I have a job. I'm going to be a daycare teacher for low pay down in Oregon, and it's a half-time job, and I think I'm really going to enjoy working with kids from about first grade through fourth grade. And we sang some freedom songs last Friday when I went down there, so I'm really looking forward to that. Does anyone else have some joy and sorrow? Yep.
Just
yeah. Oh, okay.
I have both a joy and a sorrow. I am pleased that our friend Mark from Unistar is here with us again for the weekend. And my sorrow is that, as all of you know, I'm sure that there have been 2 lesbians that have died this weekend, and it certainly affects me personally, as well as I believe it should bring home to all of us that jealousy is a very powerful and destructive emotion that controls people of all
persuasions. Any other joys or sorrows someone would like to share?
Mary? Yes. I also have a new job. I'll be fellowship advisor in the graduate fellowship's office, starting full time next week.
Any others? Announcements. We have regular announcements.
One real quickie. We have a coffee for parents of children in grades 3, 4, and 5 immediately after. Please come downstairs immediately. We do have our own finger food there, so you don't have to think here, and we'll have our own coffee. So come down immediately, get to know each other, the teachers, and the program that's going on. The newsletter was wrong. It is 2 weeks from today when we're going to have the ones for grade K-2. The other announcement is that this afternoon is the About Your Sexuality course orientation for parents will be held at 12:30, and it is important. You have really have to be at that in order to have your child participate. So as a parent, you know what's involved there.
Okay, other prayer announcements?
I'm going to put this up. It's a Food and Justice put out by the United Farm Workers. If you'd like to know more about the Great Boy Crop situation, I'll put it up by the bumper sticker demo, which is also available.
Other prayer announcements? Oh, Sherry.
May we have 2 volunteers to help wash coffee cups right immediately after?
There's one. Is there a second? Volunteer to wash coffee cups. It's a wonderful time to enjoy our new kitchen. Okay, we have a second. A third? Okay. All right, other prayer announcements.
What's going on
stop
next week?
Stop while I'm ahead here.
What's going on next week?
What's going on next week? I'm starting a mini series about
East Asia. And we're going to watch it on the television next Sunday to get us thinking about this subject, about how different, how a culture, Japan, is a different culture than ours. I think some of us, or at least I often think, well, everybody's all alike and you know, it's really not all that difficult to get along. But there are cultural differences, and we really have to recognize those and somehow in spite or even because of them, learn how to get along. This, I'll start with an excerpt from a TV program that will get us thinking about this. And if any of you have ever visited a country like Japan or China or Korea, you might want to come prepared to talk about some cultural differences you notice there. And also similarities. And that'll be going on the next three Sundays, and then the Sunday after that, I think it's the 19th of February, we'll be
Well, it's almost the day that we've set aside to recognize a man who maybe in this country has really given us a soul, and that's Martin Luther King Jr. There's going to be several things happening about in observance of that day tomorrow. First at noon in the Capitol Rotunda, there's a program that's going to be opening at noon. At 6:30 outside the Capitol, which is free to everyone. And the speaker will be Edith Finley's son, who will be also met briefly by the community choir. So I encourage you all to go and take part in these things tomorrow. I think we'll probably do a lot of there. Also, as we mentioned before, the Friendly Supper Club. This is something that's been going on for over 2 years. And all it is just people getting together of all races just to break bread together and meet each other, so that we can start to help break down this wall and understand each other and not be so alien to everybody. This happens the first Monday of every month now at Bishop's Cafeteria at 6:30. If you want a flyer, I've got several of them, and I appreciate if you tell anybody else about them. We're trying to grow so that we're just a big, happy family there, which is the way we always feel. So I encourage you to come to these events.
Thank you, Lance.
I'm Dick Bonser, editor of the Prairie Fire, which is the bi-weekly newsletter of the society. If you are a newcomer or a visitor today, there are copies of that newsletter on the table by the door. Please take one, and I'll arrange that there's a sign-up sheet there if you're interested in receiving it.
The past couple of years, I have offered to sell from the Association for Retired Citizens in Dane County, fresh California navel oranges and Texas Ruby Red grapefruit. I'm doing that again this year. Orders will be taken now through February 10th. And these are oranges and grapefruits which are guaranteed to be like 5 days off the tree. So they come to us really fresh and are very good, as people who have ordered them in the past years will attest. They have small boxes, large boxes. Those can both be subdivided. You can order a half box if you want. If you're interested, please contact me.
Other
announcements? Can we make one more quick one? There's a musician in this town that's really good. His name is Clyde Stubblefield. He plays the band, and he plays the drums, and he has for a long time with James Brown and lots of great names. He's going to be appearing next Friday in a benefit dance at Turner Hall Friday night. This is the Madison dance we're starting out at Turner Hall. This is smoke free and alcohol free and great dance music. So if you'd like to come to that.
I've got two, three others. If you're single, you're interested in getting together with other single adult Unitarians, there's a planned meeting next Sunday, 12:30 at First Society. You may have noticed in the newsletter Woman's Spirit, a weekend workshop for women. I apply on this if you want to know more. And Girl Scout cookies are being sold to Robinson's Spiritual Family Center. Any other announcements? Thanks for coming, and we hope to see you again.